2. Gunnar Hofhoen floated within the shower, buffeted from all sides by the streams of water. The fan sucking the water back out of the AG shower chamber sounded awfully loud this morning. Part of his brain told him he was running short of oxygen. He'd either have to leave the shower or grope for the air hose, which was probably in the last place he'd feel for it. It was either that or open his eyes. It all seemed too much bother. He was quite comfortable where he was. He waited to see what would give first. It was his brain's indifference to the fact he was suffocating. Suddenly he was wide awake and flailing around like some drowning basic human, desperate for breath, but afraid to breathe in the constellation of water globules he was floating within. His eyes were wide open. He saw the air hose and grabbed it. He breathed in. Shit, it was bright. His eyes dimmed the view. That was better. He felt he'd showered enough. He mumbled, "Arf, arf," into the air hose mask a few times, but the water kept on coming. Then he remembered that the module wasn't talking to him right now, because he told the suit to accept no more communications last night. Obviously, such irresponsibility had to be punished by the module being childish. He sighed. Luckily, the shower had an off button. The water jets cut off, gravity was fed gently back into the chamber, and he floated slowly down with the settling blobs of water. A reverser field clicked on, and he looked at himself in it while the last of the water drained away, sucking in his belly and sticking out his chin, while he turned his face to the best angle and smoothed down a few upstart locks of his blonde curls. "Well, I may feel like shit, but I still look great," he announced, to nobody in particular. For once, probably even the module wasn't listening. "Sorry to force the pace," the representation of his uncle Tishlin said. "'S all right," he said, through a mouthful of fail steak. He washed it down with some warmed-over infusion the module had always assured him was beneficial when you hadn't had enough sleep. It tasted disgusting enough to be either genuinely good for you or just one of the module's little jokes. "Sleep okay?" his uncle's image asked. He was, apparently, sitting across the table from Gunnar Hofhoen in the module's dining room. A pleasantly airy space filled with porcelain and flowers, and boasting a seemingly real-time view on three sides of a sunlit mountain valley, which, in reality, was half a galaxy away. A small serving drone hovered near the wall behind the man. "Good 2 hours," Gunnar Hofhoen said. He supposed he could have stayed awake the night before, when he'd first discovered his uncle's hologram waiting for him. He could have glanded something to keep him bright and awake and receptive and got all this over with then. But he'd known he'd end up paying for it eventually. And besides, he wanted to show them that just because they'd gone to the trouble of persuading his favorite uncle to record a semantic signal mind abstract state, or whatever the hell the module had called it, he still wasn't going to jump just because they said so. The only concession he'd made to all the urgency was deliberately not to dream. He had a whole suite of pretty, splendid, dream-accessible scenarios going at the moment, several of them incorporating some powerfully good and satisfying sex, and it was a positive sacrifice to miss out on any of them. So he'd gone to bed, and had a pretty good, if maybe still not quite long enough, sleep. And Uncle Tishlin's message had just had to sit twiddling its abstract semantics in the module's AI core, waiting till he got up. So far, all they'd done was exchange a few pleasantries and talk a little about old times. Partly, of course, so that Gunnar Hofhoen could satisfy himself that this apparition had genuinely been sent by his uncle, and S.C. had paid him the enormous compliment of sending not one, but two personality states to him, in order to argue him round to doing whatever it was they wanted from him. That the hologram might be a brilliantly researched forgery created by S.C. would be even more of a compliment. But that way lay paranoia.
"I take it you had a good evening," Tishlin's simulation said.
"Enormous fun."
Tishlin looked puzzled.
Gunnar Hofhoen watched the expression form on his uncle's face, and wondered how comprehensive was the duplication of his uncle's personality now encoded, living, if you wanted to look at it that way, in the module's AI core. Did whatever was in there, sent here enciphered with a specific task of persuading him to cooperate with special circumstances, actually feel? Or did it just appear to?
"Shit, I must be feeling bad," Gunnar Hofhoen thought. "I haven't bothered about that sort of shit since university."
"How can you have enormous fun with aliens?" the hologram asked, eyebrows gathering.
"Attitude," Gunnar Hofhoen said cryptically, slicing off more steak.
"But you can't drink with them, eat with them, can't really touch them, or want the same things," Tishlin said, still frowning.
Gunnar Hofhoen shrugged. "It's a kind of translation," he said. "You get used to it."
He munched away for a moment while his uncle's program, or whatever it was, digested this. He pointed his knife at the image.
"That's something I'd want, in the unlikely event I agree to do whatever it is they want me to do."
"What?" Tishlin said, leaning back, arms crossed.
"I want to become an affronter."
Tishlin's eyebrows elevated.
"You want what, boy?" he said.
"Well, some of the time," Gunnar Hofhoen said, half turning his head to the drone behind him. The machine came quickly forward and refilled his glass with the infusion.
"I mean, all I want is an affronter body, one that I can just sort of zap into and, well, just be an affronter. You know, socialize. I don't see what the problem is, really. In fact, I keep telling them it'll be a great thing for culture affront relations. I'd really be able to relate to these guys. I could really be one of them. Hell, isn't that what this ambassador shit is supposed to be all about?" He belched. "I'm sure it could be done. The module says it could, but it shouldn't, and says it's asked elsewhere. And I know all the standard objections, but I think it'd be a great idea. I'm damn sure I'd enjoy it. I mean, I could always sort of zap back into my own body any time. This really is shocking you, isn't it, Uncle?"
The image shook its head.
"You always were the oddest child, Bayer. I suppose I should have known what to expect from you.
Anybody who'd go out there to live with the affront in the first place has to be slightly strange."
Gunnar Hofhoen held his arms out wide.
"But I'm just doing what you did," he protested.
"I only wanted to meet weird aliens, Bayer. I didn't want to become one of them. Heck, and I thought you'd be proud of me. Proud, but worried. Bayer, are you seriously suggesting that becoming an affronter would be part of your price for doing what S.C. asks?"
"Certainly," Gunnar Hofhoen said, and squinted up at the hammer-beamed ceiling.
I vaguely recall asking for a ship as well last night, and the death and gravity saying yes. He shook his head and laughed. Must have imagined it. He finished the last of the steak. They've told me what they're prepared to offer buyer. Tishlin said, you didn't imagine it. Gunnar Hofoen looked up. Really, he said. Really, Tishlin said. Gunnar Hofoen nodded slowly. And how did they persuade you to act as go-between uncle? He asked. They only had to ask buyer. I may not be in contact any more, but I'm happy to help out when I can, when they have a problem. This isn't contact, uncle. This is special circumstances, buyer said quietly. They tend to play by slightly different rules. Tishlin looked serious. The image sounded defensive. I know that boy. I asked around some of my contacts before I agreed to do this. Everything checks out. Everything seems to be reliable. I suggest you do the same, obviously. But from what I can see, what I've been told is the truth. Gunnar Hofoen was silent for a moment. Okay. So what have they told you, uncle? He asked, draining the last of the infusion. He frowned, wiped his lips, and inspected the napkin. He looked at the sediment in the bottom of the glass, then glared at the servant drone. It wobbled in the drone equivalent of a shrug, and took the glass from his hands. Tishlin's representation sat forward, putting its arms on the table. Let me tell you a story, buyer. By all means, Gunnar Hofoen said, picking something from his lips and wiping it on the napkin. The serving drone started to remove the rest of the breakfast things. Long ago and far away, 2,500 years ago, Tishlin said, in a wispy tendril of suns outside the galactic plane, nearest to Azatil Cluster, but not really near to that or anywhere else. The problem child, an early general contact unit Troubadour class, chanced upon the ember of a very old star. The GCU started to investigate, and it found not one, but two unusual things. Gunnar Hofoen drew his gown about him and settled back in his seat, a small smile on his lips. Uncle Tish had always liked telling stories. Some of Gunnar Hofoen's earliest memories were of the long sunlit kitchen of the house Adois back on Sedan Orbital. His mother, the other adults of the house, and his various cousins would all be milling around, chattering and laughing, while he sat on his uncle's knee, being told tales. Some of them were ordinary children's stories, which he'd heard often before, but which always sounded better when Uncle Tish told them, and some of them his uncle's own stories, from when he'd been in contact, travelling the galaxy in a succession of ships, exploring strange new worlds, and meeting all sorts of odd folk, and finding any number of weird and wonderful things amongst the stars. Firstly, the hologram image said, the dead sun gave every sign of being absurdly ancient. The techniques used to date it indicated it was getting on for 1,000,000,000 years old. What? Gunnar Hofoen snorted. Uncle Tishlin spread his hands. The ship couldn't believe it either. To come up with this unlikely figure, it used... The apparition glanced away to one side, the way Tishlin always had when he was thinking, and Gunnar Hofoen found himself smiling. Isotopic analysis and flux-pitting assay. Technical terms, Gunnar Hofoen said, nodding. He and the hologram both smiled. "Technical terms," the image of Tishlin agreed. "But no matter what it was they used, or how they did their sums, it always came out that the Dead Star was at least 50 times older than the universe." "I never heard that one before," Gunnar Hofhoen said, shaking his head and looking thoughtful. "Me neither," Tishlin agreed. "Though, as it turns out, it was released publicly, just not until long after it had all happened. One reason there was no big fuss at the time was that the ship was so embarrassed about what it was coming up with, it never filed a full report, just kept the results to itself, in its own mind."
"Did they have proper minds back then?"
Tishlin's image shrugged. "Minds, with a small M. AI core, we'd probably call it these days. But it was certainly sentient, and the point is that the information remained in the ship's head, as it were. Where, of course, it would remain the ship's. Practically the only form of private property the culture recognized was thought and memory. Any publicly filed report or analysis was theoretically available to anybody, but your own thoughts, your own recollections, whether you were a human, a drone, or a ship mind, were regarded as private. It was considered the ultimate in bad manners even to think about trying to read somebody else's or something else's mind. Personally, Gunnar Hofhoen had always thought it was a reasonable enough rule. Although, along with a lot of other people over the years, he'd long suspected that one of the main reasons for its existence was that it suited the purposes of the culture's minds in general, and those in special circumstances in particular. Thanks to that taboo, everybody in the culture could keep secrets to themselves and hatch little schemes and plots to their heart's content. The trouble was that while in humans this sort of behavior tended to manifest itself in practical jokes, petty jealousies, silly misunderstandings, and instances of tragically unrequited love, with minds it occasionally meant they forgot to tell everybody else about finding entire stellar civilizations, or took it upon themselves to try to alter the course of a developed culture everybody already did know about, with the almost unspeakable implication that one day they might do just that not with a culture, but with the culture. Always assuming they hadn't done so already, of course.
"What about the people on board the culture ship?" Gunnar Hofhoen asked.
"They knew as well, of course, but they kept quiet, too. Apart from anything else, they had 2 weirdnesses on their hands. They assumed they had to be linked in some way, but they couldn't work out how. So they decided to wait and see before they told everybody else." Tishlin shrugged. "Understandable, I suppose. It was all so outlandish, I suppose anybody would think twice about shouting it to the rooftops. You couldn't get away with such reticence these days. But this was then. The guidelines were looser."
"What was the other unusual thing they found?"
"An artifact," Tishlin said, sitting back in the seat. "A perfect black-body sphere, 50 clicks across, in orbit around the unfeasibly ancient star. The ship was completely unable to penetrate the artifact with its sensors, or with anything else for that matter, and the thing itself showed no signs of life. Shortly thereafter, the problem child developed an engine fault, something almost unheard of even back then, and had to leave the star and the artifact.
Naturally, it left a load of satellites and sensor platforms behind it to monitor the artifacts. All it had arrived with, in fact, plus a load more it had made while it was there. However, when a follow-up expedition arrived 3 years later, remember, this all happened on the galactic outskirts, and speeds were much lower then. It found nothing, no star, no artifact, and none of the sensors and remote packages the problem child had left behind. The outgoing signals, apparently coming from the sentry units, stopped just before the follow-up expedition arrived within monitoring range. Ripples in the gravity field nearby implied the star, and presumably everything else, had vanished utterly the moment the problem child had been safely out of sensor range. Just vanished. Just vanished. Disappeared without trace, Tishlin confirmed. Most damnable thing, too. Nobody's ever just lost a son before. Even if it was a dead one. In the meantime, the General Systems vehicle, which the problem child had rendezvoused with for repairs, had reported that the GCU had effectively been attacked. Its engine problem wasn't the result of chance or some manufacturing flaw. It was the result of offensive action. Apart from that, and the still unexplained disappearance of an entire star, everything was normal for nearly 2 decades. Tishlin's hand flapped once on the table. Oh, there were various investigations and boards of inquiry and committees and so on, but the best they could come up with was that the whole thing had been some sort of high-tech projection. Maybe produced by some previously unknown elder civilization with a quirky sense of humor. Or, even less likely, that the sun and all the rest had popped into hyperspace and just sped off, though they should have been able to observe that and hadn't. But basically, the whole thing remained a mystery. And after everybody had chewed it over and over, till there was nothing left but spit, it just kind of died a natural death. Then, over the following 7 decades, the problem child decided it didn't want to be part of contact anymore. It left contact. Then it left the culture proper and joined the ulterior. Again, very unusual for its class. And meanwhile, every single human who'd been on board at the time exercised what are apparently termed unusual life choices. Tishlin's dubious look indicated he wasn't totally convinced this phrase contributed enormously to the information-carrying capacity of the language. The image made a throat-clearing noise and went on. Roughly half of the humans opted for immortality. The other half auto-euthanized. The few remaining humans underwent subtle but exhaustive investigation, though nothing unusual was ever discovered. Then there were the ship's drones. They all joined the same group mind, again in the ulterior, and have been incommunicado ever since. Apparently, that was even more unusual. Within a century, almost all of those humans who'd opted for immortality were also dead, due to further semi-contradictory, unusual life choices. Then the ulterior and special circumstances, who'd taken an interest by this time, not surprisingly, lost touch with the problem child entirely. It just seemed to disappear, too. The apparition shrugged. That was 1,500 years ago, Bayer. To this day, nobody has ever seen or heard of the ship. Subsequent investigations of the remains of a few of the humans concerned, using improved technology, has thrown up possible discrepancies in the nanostructure of the subjects' brains. But no further investigation has been deemed possible. The story was made public eventually, nearly a century and a half after it all happened. There was even a bit of a media fuss about it at the time. But by then, it was a portrait with nobody in it. The ship, the drones, the people, they'd all gone. There was nobody to talk to, nobody to interview, nothing to do profiles of. Everybody was off stage. And of course, the principal celebrities, the star and the artifacts, were the most off stage of all. "Well," Gunnar Hofhoen said. "Oh, very. Hold on," Tishlin said, holding up one finger. "There is one loose end." A single traceable survivor from the problem child, who turned up 5 centuries ago. Somebody it might be possible to talk to, despite the fact they've spent the last 24 millennia trying to avoid talking. "Human." "Human," Tishlin confirmed, nodding. "The woman who was the vessel's formal captain." "They still had that sort of thing back then," Gunnar Hofhoen said. He smiled. How quaint, he thought. "It was pretty nominal, even back then," Tishlin conceded. "More captain of the crew than of the boats. Anyway, she's still around in a sort of abbreviated form." Tishlin's image paused, watching Gunnar Hofhoen closely. "She's in storage, aboard the General Systems vehicle. Sleeper service." The representation paused to let Gunnar Hofhoen react to the name of the ship. He didn't, not on the outside anyway. "Just her personality is in there, unfortunately," Tishlin continued. "Her stored body was destroyed in an Edirian attack on the orbital concerned 500 millennia ago. I suppose for our purposes that counts as a lucky break. She'd managed to cover her tracks so well, probably with the help of some sympathetic mind, that if the attack hadn't occurred, she'd have remained incognito to this day. It was only when the records were scrutinized carefully after her body's destruction that it was realized who she really was. But the point is that special circumstances think she might know something about the artifacts. In fact, they're sure she does, though it's almost equally certain that she doesn't know what she knows." Gunnar Hofhoen was silent for a while, playing with the cord of his dressing gown. The sleeper service. He hadn't heard that name for a while, hadn't had to think about that old machine for a long time. He dreamt about it a few times, and had a nightmare or two about it even, but he tried to forget about those, tried to shove those echoes of memories to some distant corner of his mind. And had been pretty successful at it, too, because it felt very strange to be turning over that name in his mind now. "So, why's all this suddenly become important after 2.5 millennia? He asked the hologram. "Because something with similar characteristics to that artifact has turned up near a star called Asperi in the upper leaf swirl, and SC needs all the help it can get to deal with it. There's no trillion-year-old sun cinder this time, but an apparently identical artifact is just sitting there. And what am I supposed to do? Go aboard the sleeper service and talk to this woman's mimage. That's the mind-stored construct of her personality, apparently. The image looked puzzled. New one on me. Anyway, you're supposed to try to persuade her to be reborn, talk her into a rebirth, so she can be quizzed. The sleeper service won't just release her, and it certainly won't cooperate with SC. But if she asks to be reborn, it'll let her. But why? Gnarhofer and started to ask. There's more, Tishlin said, holding up one hand. Even if she won't play, even if she refuses to come back, you're to be equipped with a method of retrieving her through the link you'll forge when you talk to the mimage without the GSV knowing. Don't ask me how that's supposed to be accomplished, but I think it's got something to do with the ship they're going to give you to get you to the sleeper service, after the apprenticeship they're going to hire for you has rendezvoused with it at Tyr. Gnarhofer did his best to look skeptical. Is that possible? He asked. Retrieving her like that, I mean. Against the wishes of the sleeper. Apparently, Tishlin said, shrugging, SC thinks they've got a way of doing it. But you see what I mean when I said they want you to steal the soul of a dead woman. Gnarhofer and thought for a moment. Do you know what ship this might be, the one to get me to the sleeper? They haven't, began the image, then paused and looked amused. They just told me. It's a GCU called the Grey Area. The image smiled. Ah, I see you've heard of it, too. Yeah, I've heard of it, the man said. The Grey Area. The ship that did what the other ships both deplored and despised, actually looked into the minds of other people using its electromagnetic effectors. In a sense, the very, very distant descendants of electronic countermeasures equipment from your average Stage 3 civilization, and the most sophisticated, powerful, but also precisely controlled weaponry the average culture ship possessed. To burrow into the grisly cellular substrate of an animal consciousness and try to make sense of what it found there, for its own, usually vengeful, purposes. A pariah craft, the one the other minds called Meatfucker, because of its revolting hobby, though not, as it were, to its face. A ship that still wanted to be part of the culture proper, and nominally still was, but which was shunned by almost all its peers, a virtual outcast, amongst the great inclusionary meta-fleet that was Contact. Gnarhofer had heard about the Grey Area all right. It was starting to make sense now. If there was one vessel that might be capable of plundering, and, more importantly, that might be willing to plunder a stored soul from under the nose of the sleeper, the Grey Area was probably it. Assuming what he'd heard about the ship was true, it had spent the last decade perfecting its techniques of teasing dreams and memories out of a variety of animal species. While the sleeper service had, by all accounts, been technologically stagnant for the last 40 years, its time taken up with the indulgence of its own, scarcely less eccentric pastime. The image of Uncle Tishlin bore a distant expression for a moment, then said, "Apparently that's part of the beauty of it. Just because the sleeper service is another oddball, doesn't mean that it's any more likely than any other GSV to have the Grey Area aboard. The GCU will have to lie off, and that'll make this mimic-stealing trick easier. If the Grey Area was actually inside the GSV at the time, it probably couldn't carry it off undetected. Gnahofo and was looking thoughtful again. "This artifact thing," he said, "could almost be a what you call it, couldn't it? An outside context paradox."
"Problem," Tishlin said. "Outside context problem."
Yes, one of those. Almost. An outside context problem was the sort of thing most civilizations encountered just once, and which they tended to encounter rather in the same way a sentence encountered a full stop. The usual example given to illustrate an outside context problem was imagining you were a tribe on the largest fertile island. You tamed the land, invented the wheel or writing or whatever. The neighbors were cooperative or enslaved, but at any rate peaceful. And you were busy raising temples to yourself with all the excess productive capacity you had. You were in a position of near absolute power and control, which your hallowed ancestors could hardly have dreamed of. And the whole situation was running along just nicely, like a canoe on wet grass. When suddenly this bristling lump of iron appears, sailless and trailing steam in the bay. And these guys carrying long, funny-looking sticks come ashore and announce you've just been discovered. You're all subjects of the Emperor now. He's keen on presents called tax, and these bright-eyed holy men would like a word with your priests. That was an outside context problem. So was the suitably uptecked version that happened to whole planetary civilizations, when somebody like the affront chanced upon them first, rather than, say, the culture. The culture had had lots of minor OCPs, problems that could have proved to be terminal if they'd been handled badly. But so far, it had survived them all. The culture's ultimate OCP was popularly supposed to be likely to take the shape of a galaxy-consuming, hegemonizing swarm, an angered elder civilization, or a sudden, indeed instant visit by neighbors from Andromeda, once the expedition finally got there. In a sense, the culture lived with genuine OCPs all around it all the time, in the shape of those sublime elder civilizations. But so far, it didn't appear to have been significantly checked or controlled by any of them. However, waiting for the first real OCP was the intellectual depressant of choice for those people and minds in the culture determined to find the threat of catastrophe even in utopia.
"Almost, maybe," agreed the apparition. "Perhaps it's a little less likely to be so with your help."
Gnarhofer nodded, staring at the surface of the table.
"So, who's in charge of this?" he asked, grinning. "There's usually a mind which acts as incident controller, or whatever they call it in something like this."
"The incident coordinator is a GSV called the Not Invented Here," Tish told him. "It wants you to know. You can ask whatever you want of it."
Ah.
Gnarhofer couldn't recall having heard of the ship.
"And why me particularly?" he asked.
He suspected he already had the answer to that one.
"The sleeper service has been behaving even more oddly than usual," Tishlin said, looking suitably pained. "It's altered its course schedule. It's no longer accepting people for storage. And it's almost completely stopped communicating. But it says it will allow you on board."
"For a browbeating, no doubt," Gnarhofer said, glancing to one side and watching a cloud pass over the meadows of the valley shown on the dining room's projector walls. "Probably wants to give me a lecture." He sighed, still looking round the room. He fastened his gaze on Tishlin's simulation again.
"She's still there?" he asked. The image nodded slowly. "Shit," Gunnar Hofhoen said.